Coon Review, Print Speaking to the Blind, celebrating 40 years of audio newspaper production. Welcome to this week's edition of the Herald Scotland podcast, recorded at the Bishop Briggs Media Centre by our amazing volunteers. You can get in touch with us via Facebook, Twitter or Instagram using @CoonReview, that is @CUEANDREVIEW. You can also contact us directly by emailing information@coonreview.com. That is information@CUEANDREVIEW.com. Or by calling 0141 772 3976. That's 0141 772 3976.
The Herald Scotland, on Wednesday the 14th of February 2024. From the news section. Abortion clinic buffer zones will end intimidation and harassment. An article written by Jodie Harrison and read by me, Corey. The MSP leading moves to pass legislation to establish buffer zones around abortion clinics hopes this will be the last year women will be subject to intimidation and harassment by protesters outside medical facilities. Green Health spokesperson Gillian McKay condemned such demonstrations as being utterly shameful. The MSP spoke out as pro-life group 40 Days of Life started a 40-day-long period of demonstrations outside clinics where women can terminate pregnancies. Its campaign is due to run until March 24th, but Ms. McKay said, "These protests are utterly shameful. Nobody should have to face down a sea of graphic placards and banners in order to get to a hospital. It is targeted intimidation and harassment, and it is being done in order to stop people from accessing the healthcare they are entitled to. It underlines exactly why buffer zones are so critical." The Green MSP has introduced a members' bill at Holyrood, which, if passed, would outlaw demonstrations at clinics. The Abortion Services Safe Access Zones Scotland Bill proposes that pro-life campaigners be fined if they stage a protest within 200 metres of such a facility, with unlimited fines for serious breaches. The legislation, which is being supported by the Scottish Government, was brought forward in response to complaints from women who face protests when attending the clinics. MSPs on Holyrood's Health Committee will start hearing evidence on the proposals later this month. Ms. McKay said, "I hope that all MSPs support my bill and that we can make this the year that we stop the protests for good. I have spoken to so many service users and hospital staff who have told me about their experiences and the awful impact these protests have had on them. My heart and solidarity goes out to everyone who has had to endure them. Abortion rights are human rights. They are non-negotiable. I don't want this to be a country where people are afraid to access healthcare. I hope 2024 can be the year that changes." That article was from the Herald Scotland. It was from the news section. It was written by Jodie Harrison. And it was read by me, Corey. The Herald Scotland, on Wednesday the 14th of February 2024. From the news section. Dogs Trust shares six Glasgow rescue dogs looking for love. An article written by Jenny Sanderson and read by me, Corey. Six rescue dogs at the Dogs Trust in Glasgow are hoping to meet their true love this Valentine's. The amazingly lovable canines, who have spent a long time in care, were taken out on date nights and for romantic getaways with shelter staff to give them a break from kennel life. Sandra Downey, manager at the rehoming centre, said, "All dogs want to love and be loved. and it can be hard to see our amazingly lovable dogs spend so long in our care without much interest. Seeing how they behave and react within a home environment is so important when helping us find the right home for every dog. We couldn't achieve all that we do without our fantastic foster carers, staff and volunteers who open their homes and hearts to our dogs. And it's the perfect time to share the stories of our six stunners, each waiting to find true love. Captain. Affectionately known as Captain Cuddles by rescue staff, Captain is a 10-year-old Staffordshire Bull Terrier cross who has been at the Dogs Trust since December of 2021. He is described as a very loving and affectionate boy, who is known for giving kisses to his canine carers and snuggling on the sofa. Volunteer Nicola, who spent time getting to know him at home, said, "Captain is a massive snuggle bug, who loves attention and back scratches. When Captain and I were first introduced, he was a little shy, but now we are the best of friends. He visits often and is loving his home from home. He's most happy with a cuddly toy and loves his treats. He is a perfect house guest and he really deserves to meet his special someone this Valentine's." Duke. Duke the Doberman is described as a dashing boy who has both good looks and charm, and loves playing fetch with a tennis ball. The 9-year-old arriving at the Dogs Trust on Valentine's Day in 2023 and is still awaiting his soulmate. Foster carer John, who has had him stay at his house, said, "Duke was a joy to have at home. He was very affectionate, enjoying a cuddle, and he liked to follow me around, and yet he never set foot upstairs. He was house trained and settled so well, sleeping like a baby at night. He will be a wonderful companion for someone who wants a loyal best friend." Jack. Jack is described as a super smart boy, who is renowned for always putting a smile on the face of his canine carers. The 10-year-old Staffordshire Bull Terrier has been at the Dogs Trust since April of 2021, where he loves having an armchair in his kennel. He has an amazing relationship with his rehabilitation trainer, Greg, who said, "It wasn't a great surprise to learn Jack loves sofa surfing. He also loves looking out the window, watching the world go by. One thing he isn't so keen on is the rain, so he will very happily sit at the back door and watch the rain rather than go out into it. He is so well behaved at home, is house trained, and is a fabulous best pal. You would never be short of company on the sofa with Jack about." Jupiter. Jupiter is a 5-year-old Doberman cross who is described as an affectionate and fun-loving young lad. Nicknamed Super Jupiter, this dog is said to have boundless love to give. He adores company and playing with tennis balls. Dogs Trust Glasgow's media coordinator Claire had him over to visit and said, "Jupiter is a delight to have at home. I would describe him as a Velcro boy, as he doesn't leave your side. He loves snuggles on the sofa, thinks a digestive biscuit is a real treat, and is fully house trained. He is so easy to live with, so is going to make someone happy when he meets his one true love." Rania. Rania is described as a gorgeous girl who is loving and loyal. The 6-year-old crossbreed can be shy on first meeting and prefers to take her time to get to know people. She has enjoyed spending time with the training team and learns quickly, rescuers said. Rehabilitation trainer Rachel said, "Rania was easier to live with than my own dog. She was unsure of the laminate flooring. However, she was fully house-trained and was such a snuggly, affectionate girl. This special girl is so ready to live in a home once she finds her Valentine. Sebastian. Sebastian is described as a handsome boy who is bouncing, loving and loyal. The 8-year-old lurcher came into Dogs Trust care on Valentine's Day 2023 and has been searching for his love ever since. Sebastian loves a squeaky toy, and his idea of fun is running around with one off lead in a safe and secure space. Rehabilitation trainer Chloe said, "I've loved spending precious time with Sebastian away from the centre, and it was clear from his behaviour that he has lived in a home before. He is house trained and is a smashing sofa buddy. He was such a happy boy when at home, and after a year at the centre, we hope this Valentine's Day is his last in our care. He is a dream dog." All the dogs waiting to be rehomed are available to see on Glasgow's Dog Trust website, which is www.dogstrust.org/rehoming/r-centres/Glasgow. You could also go on to Google and simply type in Dogs Trust Glasgow. Anyone interested in becoming a foster carer can find out more at www.dogstrust.org.uk/rehoming/fostering. That article was from the Herald Scotland. It was from the news section. It was written by Jenny Sanderson, and it was read by me, Corey. The Herald Scotland, on Wednesday, the 14th of February, 2024. From the news section. Shetland Coast Guard Emergency Channel broadcast Radio 4 for 12 hours. An article written by Jodie Harrison and read by me, Corey. A Coast Guard emergency radio channel was blocked for 12 hours by a sailor off the coast of Shetland listening to BBC Radio 4 non-stop. Shetland Coast Guard had to contact the BBC for help after a ship somewhere near the islands accidentally broadcast the station on the Maritime Emergency Channel. Channel 4 had to send out a message telling all ships in the area to check their radio equipment. It is thought the channel had been left open by someone leaving the broadcast switched on. The distress and safety frequency, known as the VHF Channel 16, experienced intermittent interference on February 5th as the sailor listened to episodes of The Archers, Women's Hour and Just a Minute. The Radio 4 message said, "This is an important safety-related message on behalf of His Majesty's Coast Guard. This radio programme is being transmitted over VHF Channel 16 by a vessel with an open mic. This is blocking all distress, urgency and safety broadcasts. All vessels in the vicinity of South East Shetland are requested to check their radios and ensure that the microphone transmit button is not being inadvertently held open." Laura Kay, the team leader of Shetland Coast Guard, told Radio 4's Broadcasting House programme how the incident unfolded. She said, "The day watch had Radio 4 coming through the transmission. It was transmitting for about 12 hours at various levels of clarity. In our policy, there is actually a bit that says, if you can hear a radio station, you can contact them and ask them to broadcast a safety message. We have had incidents before where there has been a fault with the equipment. If you spilled something on the handset, the button could stick, or it's just not been properly set down." The team leader added that there had been no incidents during the period the channel was blocked. The Coast Guard said VHF Channel 16 must be kept clear for distress and urgency traffic only, and urged mariners to regularly check their radio equipment to ensure that it is in good condition to avoid accidental transmission. That article was from the Herald Scotland. It was from the news section. It was written by Jodie Harrison, and it was read by me, Corey.
This is from the Herald Scotland on Thursday, the 15th of February, 2024, from the news section. Beloved Hidden Lane Tea Room, Finiston, Glasgow, sold. This article is written by Brian Donnelly. A much-loved tea room, set among an eclectic collection of businesses, has been sold. Smith and Clough Business Associates said the cafe in a hidden gem location is the latest in a line of deals in a popular part of Scotland's largest city. The value of the transaction for the Hidden Lane Tea Room, neighboured by a range of mostly artistic businesses in Glasgow, was not disclosed, but the lease was on the market at £45,000. We are delighted to announce the sale of the Hidden Lane Tea Room, a quirky and vintage tea room nestled within the Hidden Lane, just off Argyle Street in the heart of Finiston, said Jonathan Clough of Smith and Clough. Described as Glasgow's hidden gem, the Hidden Lane is home to a fantastic and eclectic mix of local, independent and predominantly artistic businesses, including a brewery, record store, gift shop, pottery shop, art gallery, yoga studio, plus much more. He added, Finiston remains as popular as ever, and this is the latest in a long line of deals we have carried out in the area. So if you're thinking of selling, then please get in touch. The tea room has also received positive reviews on TripAdvisor, where it is number 2 in its category in Glasgow. One visitor said, This is a lovely little tea shop down a lane in an area with lots of other nice little shops. We stopped in for lunch and my partner's ham sandwich looked great, with thick cuts of meat. Another posted, I booked a breakfast afternoon tea at 11 a.m. and the experience, atmosphere and service were top notch. The tea selection is second to none. The cakes and food will knock your socks off. That article was written by Brian Donnelly. This is from the Herald Scotland on Thursday, the 15th of February, 2024, from the news section. Edinburgh police hunt after attempted dog napping in Balerno. This is written by Ginny Sanderson. Two men who tried to steal a dog from its owner at knife point are being hunted by police. The 43-year-old man was walking a dog in a field near National Cycle Route 75 and Lanark Road West in Balerno when he was approached by the two men. According to police, one of them tried to take the dog from the owner and the other assaulted him with a knife between 5:15 p.m. and 5:30 p.m. on Tuesday, February the 13th. The owner was taken by ambulance to the Royal Infirmary of Edinburgh Hospital after the incident. Police described the first man as white, around 50 years old, with a stocky build and at around 5'6" in height. He had a ginger greying beard and was wearing a black thermal beanie hat, black puffer jacket, and had a local accent. The second suspect is described as a white man in his 20s, of slim build, at around 5'10" in height. He was said to be clean-shaven, wearing a hat, black jacket with green writing, with pale blue denim jeans and tan-coloured boots. The pair were said to have made off towards Ravelrig Road. Detective Inspector Martin Smith of Edinburgh CID said, This appears to be an attempt to rob the man of his dog, and it is vital that we establish the full circumstances of what happened and trace the men responsible. I would like to speak to anyone who was in the area between 5 p.m. and 6 p.m. on Tuesday who saw or heard anything suspicious. Similarly, anyone with a private CCTV, doorbell footage, or dashcam of the area is urged to review the footage and bring anything significant to our attention. Officers will be carrying out additional patrols in the area, and anyone with any concerns can approach these officers. Anyone with any information can call 101, quoting Incident 2591 of Tuesday, February the 13th, 2024. And that article was written by Ginny Sanderson. This is from the Herald Scotland on Thursday the 15th of February 2024, from the news section. Inflation unchanged in January as food prices fall. This article is written by Jodie Harrison. Inflation unexpectedly held steady last month as food prices fell for the first time in almost 2.5 years, official figures show. Consumer Prices Index, CPI, inflation remained unchanged at 4% in January, lower than the 4.2% that economists had forecast, although still double the Bank of England's 2% target, the Office for National Statistics, ONS, said. The monthly drop in food prices of 0.4% was the first since September 2021, with the cost of bread and cereals, cream crackers and chocolate biscuits falling, the ONS said. While food and non-alcoholic beverage prices are still 7% higher than a year ago, the category saw the slowest rate of increase since April 2022. On a monthly basis, food and non-alcoholic beverage prices fell by 0.4% between December and January. Most of this drop was down to a 1.3% decrease in bread and cereal prices, the largest in that category since May 2021. The ONS said 7 out of 11 types of food and non-alcoholic beverages it tracks put downward pressure on the inflation figure last month. Despite the most recent fall, food and non-alcoholic beverages are around 25% more expensive than they were in January 2022. In the entire decade before that, prices only rose around 10%. ONS chief economist Grant Fitzner said, "Inflation was unchanged in January, reflecting counteracting effects within the basket of goods and services. The price of gas and electricity rose at a higher rate than this time last year, due to an increase in the energy price cap, while the cost of second-hand cars went up for the first time since May. Offsetting these, prices of furniture and household goods decreased by more than a year ago, and food prices fell in the month for the first time in over 2 years. All of these factors combined resulted in no change to the headline rate this month." Chancellor Jeremy Hunt said, "Inflation never falls in a perfect straight line, but the plan is working. We have made huge progress in bringing inflation down from 11%, and the Bank of England forecast that it will fall to around 2% in a matter of months." Shadow Chancellor Rachel Reeves said, "After 14 years of economic failure, working people are worse off. Prices are still rising in the shops, with the average household's costs up £110 a week compared to before the last election. Inflation is still higher than the Bank of England's target, and the millions of families are struggling with the cost of living. The Conservatives cannot fix the economy because they are the reason it's broken. It's time for change. Only Labour has a long-term plan to get Britain's future back by delivering more jobs, more investment and cheaper bills." Economists' thoughts immediately turned to what this could mean for the Bank of England's decisions in the months ahead. The bank had forecast that inflation would be 4.1% last month, so it might conclude that its measures to combat inflation are working better than previously thought. Interest rates are currently at their highest levels in 16 years in order to keep a lid on runaway inflation. So the surprise figures on Thursday increase the likelihood of the bank cutting interest rates sometime in the first half of this year, said Samuel Toombs, chief UK economist at Pantheon Macroeconomics. We continue to think that CPI outturns over the coming months will convince the bank's Monetary Policy Committee in the second quarter that monetary policy does not need to be quite as restrictive as it is currently. Though it looks like a toss-up whether the committee will opt to cut bank rate for the first time in May or June, he said. As markets opened on Wednesday morning, traders seemed optimistic, sending the FTSE 100 up by about 0.5%. That article was written by Jodie Harrison.
This is from the Herald Scotland, on Friday the 16th of February 2024. From the news section, Scottish Labour candidate Maureen Burke under fire for Cruise Clash. Exclusive by Tom Gordon, political editor. A would-be Labour MP for one of the poorest parts of Scotland has missed a key finance meeting and the start of her party's conference to go on a luxury cruise. Glasgow councillor Maureen Burke missed the setting of the council's £3 billion budget on Thursday and failed to join in remotely while on holiday. Ms Burke, the candidate for Glasgow North East, which includes Springburn, Ballornock and Easterhouse, is understood to be in the Caribbean for at least a week. The SNP, which is defending the marginal Westminster seat, said Ms Burke's absence suggested she would make a poor MP if she won. Ms Burke, 65, a councillor for the North East ward since 2012, last month posted a social media video saying her area needed vital funding from the SNP Green government. Standing in front of a local flooding problem, she asked, "Where's our SNP MP, MSP and councillor? The councillor who could get this sorted?" However, she was not present at Thursday's budget meeting, when Labour put forward an alternative spending package for the city. The SNP administration later comfortably passed its own budget with Green support. Ms Burke's absence also coincides with the Scottish Labour conference taking place in Glasgow from this morning until 1pm on Sunday. She will miss today's keynote speech by Scottish leader Anna Sarwar and a welcome address by her council group leader George Redmond. Many of the party's other general election candidates are attending, including Dr Zubir Ahmed from Glasgow South West, Midlothian's Kirsty McNeill, Torkel Crichton from the Western Isles, Pamela Nash from Motherwell and Martin McCluskey from Inverclyde. A Glasgow SNP spokesperson said, "Councillor Burke's decision to go on a luxury Caribbean cruise instead of turning up to do her job shows the people of Glasgow North East the type of MP she would be. If her constituents don't come first when she's a councillor, why should they believe she would be any different in Westminster? Maybe it's the salary she's interested in, and the number of holidays that could provide." Frank McAvity, the Labour business manager on Glasgow City Council, said he had given Ms Burke permission to be away during the budget meeting, and that she had taken council kit with her to join in remotely, but had evidently been unable to do so. Referring to the pressure of the election campaign later this year, he said, "She said she was needing a break. So I said, you're better going early in anticipation of the rest of the year being pretty stressful." She got permission. She had taken stuff out with her to try and get a remote connection. It all depends on whether she's come in for the day somewhere. I know she's on a cruise. It was just unlucky today. Mr. McAvity said he was almost certain Miss Burke would be back for part of the conference, as the cruise was a week long, although he was unsure of its location. The SNP's Anne McLaughlin held Glasgow North East in 2019 by just 2,548 votes. Asked about the SNP criticism that the episode suggested Ms Burke would make a poor MP for the constituency, Mr McAveety said Ms McLaughlin was invisible. He added, "The people will make that judgment in due course, but I'm pretty confident Maureen will get their support." The Herald attempted to contact Ms Burke. That article was by Tom Gordon. This is from the Herald Scotland, on Monday, the 19th of February, 2024, from Voices section. Entrepreneurs call for action to save Scotland's high streets. Article by Dominic Ryan. Two of Scotland's top entrepreneurs are urging local authorities to abandon punitive car parking charges and to lower business rates in order to halt the further decline of Scotland's high streets. Lord Willie Hoy said, "Looking at the state of high streets, the length and breadth of the country would break your heart. There are so many shops closed, so many pubs closed, so many businesses closing down. You have to ask yourself if the high street really does have a future." Also speaking on the Go Radio Business Show, his co-host Sir Tom Hunter said, "It cannot stay the way it is just now. My top line thoughts on this are very simple. Make the car parking free. That's a move that's already in the gift of local councils. Then you have to look at the high business rates. Above all, the best people to decide what actually goes in the high street are entrepreneurs, so make it easy for them to go in and try something new. If the business doesn't work, they'll have lost a wee bit of money. However, they can find a winning formula if the rent and rates are affordable. This way, if they do fail, they fail cheap. They fail quick. But then they try something else." Sir Tom also called for residential buildings to be put back into the high street, arguing this would be another goal that would not be difficult to achieve. Lord Hoy agreed, adding, "It's not rocket science, but the problem is, because of the pressure on the purse strings, the local councils are doing the complete opposite of what's required. They're even charging for out-of-hours parking now. They're charging on a Sunday. They've introduced low emission zones. All of these things are more and more barriers to successful trading and getting the high street off its knees. It's short-term thinking for a long-term problem. We should also consider the physical state of some of the buildings and closed-down shops. They look derelict." Sir Tom highlighted Ayr as a prime example of a town that is in desperate need of investment and proactive planning. "Ayr was once a vibrant place," he said. "I lived there for many years, and we had good shops in the high street. Now much of it looks terrible." That article was by Dominic Ryan. This is from the Herald Scotland, on Monday, the 19th of February, 2024. From Voices section. Herald Diary, The Torn Face Jacket. Compiled by Lauren Jackson. Gordon Casely spotted this store in Inverness, where the cookers for sale will ensure that things get very hot in the kitchen. And the photograph featured shows the sign for the company, called Bonk & Co, The Stoves Family. Letting rip. The Diary's vivacious fashion correspondent, Jim Morrison, has noticed that those rugged outdoor jackets sold by the North Face clothing brand are currently very popular. Which reminds Jim of a conversation about haute couture that he once overheard in Inchinnan Community Club when a notoriously grumpy member arrived wearing a North Face jacket. A fellow member, glancing at the logo, said, "Should that no say the torn face in your jacket, Huey?" Flight of fancy. A diary tale about the perils of flying reminds Gordon McRae of a trip he took from Leeds to Bradford on a rickety little plane with propellers on the wings and a minimum number of seats inside. One of the passengers mentioned to the flight attendant that he could feel a cold draft. The attendant promised to address the problem and promptly disappeared behind the curtain into the cockpit, where Gordon assumed she was adjusting the air conditioning. A minute later, she emerged from behind the curtain and announced that the temperature should definitely improve, as she had asked the pilot to close his window. Our uneasy reader hoped this was just her little joke. Watch the birdie. Utopian idealist Tony Mills from Grangemouth says, "I dream of living in a world where a chicken can cross a road without having its motives questioned." The Kilmarnock edition. We recently mentioned a cinematic game once played in the diary, where we asked readers to rewrite famous movie quotations as though they had been delivered in Scotland. To celebrate Glasgow Film Festival, starting later this month, we've decided to revive this patriotic pursuit. David Donaldson suggests, "Toto, I've a feeling we're not in Kilmarnock anymore." Gunning for victory. Last week's Wellingborough by-election was bad news for the Tories and good news for Labour. It was even better news for the diary, as it has provided us with a perfect example of nominative determinism. For an independent candidate in the election was Anna Savage Gunn, or A Savage Gunn for short. Even more intriguingly, diary correspondent Rosie Wheeler points out that A Savage Gunn was formerly a senior police officer. Adds Rosie, "Of course, the British police aren't as heavily armed as their American counterparts. So when she was still in the force, Anna should have changed her name to A Savage Truncheon." Biting humour. Ravenous reader Patricia Haig tells us, "When I go to McDonald's, I like to have a Happy Meal, so I leave the kids at home." That article was compiled by Lauren Jackson. This is from the Herald Scotland, on Monday, the 19th of February, 2024, from Voices section. How the SNP started failing the kitchen table test. Article by Mark Smith, feature writer. If you want to know what's going on with public opinion, there's all the usual sources: the polls, the surveys, the vox pops, the in-depth psychological analysis by top political scientists, and my kitchen table. The precise statistical significance of my kitchen table remains uncertain, but the way the chit-chat round it has changed is interesting. Most of the foundations of Scottish public life are remarkably resilient. 45% belief in independence, support for the SNP in its strongholds, but the chitter-chatter in kitchens like mine tells a slightly different story. The story is shift essentially, or an element of it. And the friends I had staying this weekend were fairly typical. We sat at the table and played Monopoly and backgammon, and when they weren't winning by being dirty cheats, the chat was about life and news and politics and the upcoming election. And what it revealed, as it has on other occasions, is a change in attitude, a shift of view. That's troubling for the SNP, but revealing too about the party's increasingly confused relationship with the middle classes. If you doubt this and question the evidential basis of my kitchen table, I'm pleased to say that this weekend there was other, possibly more robust, data from the Diffley Partnership. What they did was they analysed the 27 polls conducted in Scotland in the year since the resignation of Nicola Sturgeon, and it showed that the switchers from the SNP, like my friends at the table, have largely come from the middle classes. Deeper down, the data shows something else as well, which is that the attitudes of middle-class voters appear to have changed most significantly in the spring and summer of last year, which chimes with what my chums were saying. Nicola Sturgeon was a key part of support for the SNP, which strengthened during the pandemic. Then came her resignation, the motorhome, the tent in the garden, dot, dot, dot. In February 2021, net trust in Sturgeon was plus 18. It is now minus 19. You could try and downplay the importance of the Sturgeon factor. Tony Benn used to say issues matter more than personalities, but that's not how it works really. Sturgeon was important. People liked her, and she was apparently competent and trustworthy. But it started to shift when the scandals broke. I saw some of the shenanigans for myself when I was up at her house at the height of the furore, and it was a bad, bad look. It changed attitudes. It started the movement. However, the harder thing for the SNP, who need to keep the middle-class voters they started to win over about 10 years ago, is that Sturgeon isn't the only factor that's changing minds round kitchen tables. Also problematic is a policy programme that's sending mixed signals to voters who are a bit better off. Does the SNP want to protect their income or take a bigger slice of it? For a while, late Salmond and early Sturgeon, it looked like the SNP wanted to be seen to be on the side of the middle class. It told them their children could go to university without paying tuition fees, and they could go to the chemist to get their prescription and not have to pay anything, and their council tax wouldn't go up, and they would get a payment towards their fuel during the winter, and so on. They were policies aimed at middle-class voters, and it worked. In more recent times, however, the message has been more untuned and unfocused. I'm writing this 50 years to the day since Dennis Healey made his famous "till the pips squeak" remark about certain well-off taxpayers, and under the Labour government of the time, the highest rate of income tax was 83%. We're nowhere near those days, of course, and even if we were, only a small number of very well-off people would be affected. But in some ways, the situation in Scotland is worse than that. As in, worse for the SNP. The issue is that, as far as Scottish voters are concerned, the higher tax starts for people earning £28,000 a year, because that's the threshold for Scottish taxpayers to pay more than their UK counterparts. Hamza Youssef is also making it worse by introducing a new tax band and raising the top rate. It means many middle-class voters will certainly pay more tax and have less disposable income. But the worst bit, from an SNP strategical point of view, is that it bites down hard and it bites down low on people earning no more than the average income. The chat round the kitchen tables is, we're feeling it. To make things worse, Mr. Youssef has been sending out other signals worrying for voters with an eye on their incomes. Last summer, for example, the First Minister said he wasn't all that sure anymore about universal school meals. "I've got a 14-year-old now," he said. "Should people be paying for her free school meals when I earn a First Minister's salary? I don't think that's the right way to use that money. The better way is to target it to those that need it most." In some ways, that's fair enough. I'd be supportive of a much more targeted approach to benefits and payouts, including the ones I receive, and it may not come to anything anyway, but casting doubt on the principle of universal benefits while also raising taxes on average incomes is a classic mixed signal, and it's unsettling and potentially costly for middle-class voters. Another example is the current debacle over council tax. Whether they admitted it or not, the SNP's original freeze in the tax had the biggest positive effect on the middle class. Councils then started raising council tax again, only for Mr. Youssef to announce last year that it would be frozen once more. In fact, it's still not entirely clear if that's what's actually going to happen. A couple of councils have buckled and agreed, but others appear to be resisting. The question is then, what is Mr. Youssef trying to tell us, the people gathered round our kitchen tables? On the one hand, he's telling us our taxes are going up. On the other, he's telling us they'll be frozen. On the one hand, he's telling us we'll get benefits. On the other, he's saying he's not so sure. There's no consistency. It's becoming a mystery what the party thinks about the middle class. Or to be blunt, there are fewer clear financial incentives to vote SNP. And that's a problem for a party that needs the votes of the people round my table and yours. The bigger context is that some of the other fundamentals of Scottish politics do not appear to be adjusting, and even relatively big shifts among the middle classes may not be enough. Equally, the breakthroughs that Mr. Yusuf and his comrades crave, big majorities, big support for independence, are unlikely, if not impossible, without the middle class voters who came over to the SNP. The problem there is that those middle class voters are sitting at their tables and looking at their bank accounts and switching on the radio and hearing talk of taxes and the police and WhatsApps and all the rest of it. And they're saying, what does this mean? Is the SNP good for me? I'm not so sure now. That article was by Mark Smith.
From the Herald Scotland, Monday the 19th of February, from the news section, George Galloway, favourite for Rochdale by-election, report by Jodie Harrison. George Galloway is confident of becoming the next MP for Rochdale as the final full week of campaigning in the by-election begins. The one-time Labour and Respect Party MP, now of the Workers' Party of Britain, is also the bookies' favourite, following the implosion of the Labour Party campaign last week. Asghar Ali, the Labour candidate, had party support withdrawn over remarks suggesting Israel was complicit with the massacre of its own people on October the 7th. Instead of Mr. Ali, chosen to replace the late Labour MP Sir Tony Lloyd, and who has apologised for her remarks, the town may now have Mr. Galloway representing it in Parliament come election day on February 29th. Mr. Galloway's campaign is heavy on the Palestinian cause and Gaza, an issue close to the heart of many of Rochdale's Muslim population. His campaign believes 15,000 votes are enough to win most by-elections, and Rochdale has a 30,000-strong Asian community. Mr. Galloway said, obviously these are quite unusual circumstances, so yes, bookies favourite and the bookies are not usually wrong, but we are not taking anything for granted. Confident but not complacent. His campaign is run from a Suzuki dealership outside the town centre, the building space gifted by a local supporter. Also come to support is Chris Williamson, former Labour MP for Derby North, suspended by the party in 2019 in a row over anti-Semitism. Mr. Galloway says Gaza and Palestine is not the only issue he's campaigning on, citing the closure of local maternity services, the NHS, the economy and Rochdale, one of the poorest towns in England. He said, when you've got a town in which you cannot be born, it's not really a town at all. You lose, first in a small way and later completely, you lose your identity, and the people of Rochdale once had a proud identity. This was the town of Gracie Fields. This was a town people were glad to say they came from. The football club is a metaphor. It got relegated, 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 until it fell out of the league altogether, and that's what happened to this town. He denies his campaign is stirring up trouble and division, as claimed by opponents. Mr. Galloway, who has worked for Iranian-run Press TV and Kremlin-backed Russia TV channel RT, said, you say you've got to put it to me. If you were actually interested in journalism, you wouldn't be putting that, you'd be putting more interesting things. But as you put it to me, let me respond to it. That was Labour's shtick before the candidate again brought disgrace to Rochdale with his recorded comments. The people who brought division to Rochdale are Labour. The people who covered up the grooming gangs was Labour. The people that pulled their candidate because of anti-Semitism was Labour. Mr. Galloway's unrepentant about the chance of from the river to the sea at his campaign rallies in the town, a face regarded as anti-Semitic by some. But I don't regard it as anti-Semitic, he said. I don't, so I can say it. This is a free country. I'm in favour of a democratic state for Jews, Muslims and Christians between the river and the sea. You may not like that, others may not like that, but that's what I believe and we'll see if people vote for it. I'm concerned about the blood and flesh that's been torn apart in Gaza. The feelings someone might have in England about me using the words river to the sea are of much less importance than that. Mr. Galloway claimed to have negotiated with the owner of a shopping centre in the town to bring Primark to Rochdale and pledge to get maternity service reopened in Rochdale. Issues nothing to do with Gaza, he said. Mr. Galloway was also asked about alleged past support for Bashar al-Assad, dictator of Syria, and it was put to him accusations of his alleged apologism for others with dire human rights records. He said, right now, not in Syria, but right now in Gaza, this minute, children are being killed. That's whataboutery. I'm not going into that. You could say to me, what about the Congo? What about the Ulaanbaatar? You're diverting attention from an action genocide happening right now. I reject that. And it's whataboutery, so I'm not going any further down that road. Also standing are Ian Donaldson, Liberal Democrats, Polly Listen, Conservative Party, Michael Howarth, Independent, William Howarth, Independent, Raphine Rodent Subordina, the official Sir Raphine Looney Party, and David Tully, Independent. Guy Otten, the Green Party candidate, has his party support withdrawn over comments made on Twitter, though, like Mr. Alley, his name will still appear in the ballot paper. And that report was by Jody Harrison. From the Herald of Scotland, Monday the 19th of February, from the news section, oil and gas chiefs to hold crisis talks over Labour's windfall tax. Article by David Ball. Oil and gas chiefs will hold crisis talks over Labour's plans for a windfall tax on profits as Humza Yousaf will deliver a speech today in Aberdeen on the future of Scotland's energy sector. Offshore Energy UK, OEUK, is to convene emergency summits this week in response to Labour's plans for a windfall tax. Sir Keir Starmer proposed a proper windfall tax earlier this month when he scaled back his party's £28 million a year green investment pledge. A new energy profits levy for oil and gas production was introduced in 2022 after global energy prices shot up in the wake of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Labour intends to extend the tax to 2029 if they reach government, with the energy profits levy rising to 78%, saying that it would raise £10.8 billion over 5 years to help pay for their green spending plans. Speaking ahead of the meetings, OEUK Chief Executive David Whitehouse said, "We remain deeply concerned about what Labour's proposals could do to our people. If we can't get companies to invest here, there are no jobs. It's that simple. I'm already hearing from our supply chain and from energy producers that these proposals would deliver a hammer blow to the energy we need today and the homegrown transition to cleaner energies that everyone in the UK wants to see. These meetings will allow us to gather more evidence from employers to put to the Labour leadership. As a sector that supports 200,000 jobs, contributes over £20 billion a year to the wider UK economy, and has the skills and infrastructure to deliver a homegrown energies transition, we have so much to offer." On Sunday, Scottish Labour leader Anna Sarwar was asked about concern from businesses connected to the North Sea industry. He said oil and gas companies raking in billions of pounds in profit should not pay less tax, while noting that industry is important in building the transition to a green economy. He told BBC Scotland's Sunday Show, "I've been meeting many of these companies this week to have conversations with them. That's why we're really clear, alongside a windfall tax, we'll have a GB Energy, a publicly owned generation company headquartered in Scotland, that will use the power of a UK treasury to leverage in UK money, but also private sector money to manage that transition. Mr. Sarwar said all of Labour's energy policies would be driven by four principles, one of which was more jobs, not fewer jobs. Speaking in his keynote speech to the Scottish Labour conference yesterday, Sir Keir said that if his party forms the next UK government, it will build a bridge to the future, adding that it's a transition we have to make. He doubled down on his proposed windfall tax announcement, labelling it a tough decision, adding that it's not good enough to say we will do something popular. Acknowledging fears over energy jobs in the North East, Sir Keir said that work will continue for decades to come. The UK Labour leader said the transition would give workers and their community a future, not just for the short term, but for decades. Ryan Crichton, Policy Director at Aberdeen and Grampian Chamber of Commerce, has condemned Labour's windfall tax, exploration ban and removal of investment allowances. He said, The outcome of the proposed policies could be anywhere between 20,000 and 100,000 job losses. Even trade unions are drawing comparisons with the closure of the UK's coal pits in the 1980s. Mr. Yousaf will deliver a speech in Aberdeen this morning on preparing Scotland for the energy transition. He's expected to say that neither Labour nor the Tories had the backbone, the political will, or the political mettle to back Scotland's green future, and will claim that the SNP does. He will add, "In Scotland we have the will, we have the energy, all we lack is the power. Remote control of Scottish energy from Westminster has been a complete failure in every sense of the word. A vote for the SNP is a vote to control our energy future." Scottish Conservative Chairman Chris Hoy hit out at Labour's destructive oil and gas policies, saying plans for a windfall tax on energy firms have been roundly criticised by Scottish businesses. He added, "Labour are betraying North Sea workers and abandoning a crucial Scottish industry." And that report was by David Ball. From the Herald Scotland, Monday the 19th of February, from the news section, over 660,000 Scots hit by mental health problems over spiralling debt. Report by Martin Williams. Nearly 1 in 10 in Scotland have seen their mental health and well-being affected by spiralling debt, it has emerged. A new campaign is encouraging people to seek advice if they are worried about their debts. As research showed, over 660,000 people in Scotland cite debt as impacting their mental health. 2 weeks ago, the Herald revealed that an extraordinary energy bill debt mountain, which was plaguing the nation, has doubled in size in the space of 3 years, with the most vulnerable Scots estimated to be owing over £260 million. Calls are being made for urgent government intervention to write off much of what is owed by the most vulnerable in the continuing cost of living crisis and curtail the rising mountain of energy debt, which stood at £2.91 billion across the UK at the end of September. Analysis by the energy market regulator, Ofgem, seen by the Herald, shows that £1 billion has been added to a debt mountain across the UK in the last year alone, with some £2.916 billion owed in energy bills as of the end of September last year. 3 years before energy prices started to surge, it was £1.549 billion. The current levels of debt, which take into account those who have been in arrears for over 91 days, are at their highest level since Ofgem began its round of tracking in 2018. Scotland is also sitting in a council tax debt mountain of over £1.3 billion, while concerns grow that the continuing cost of living crisis will continue to deepen public debt. Government records based on council returns seen by the Herald show that debt levels have hit record levels, while collection rates have remained fairly static. The debt mountain equates to nearly half of the £2.837 billion expected to be collected in council tax from Scots households in 2022-23. At the end of the financial year, council tax outstanding within the 12 months has risen by over 12% since the pandemic, from £96.947 pounds in 2018-19 to £108.771 million in 2022-23. At March 31st, the end of the 2022-23 financial year, Scotland's cumulative council tax debt mountain, recorded from 1990 to 2000, has grown to £1.343 billion. It was at £1.157 billion in 2019-20. Some £42.366 million of the debt dates back 10 years or more. Citizens Advice Scotland is launching Stressed About Debt today, Monday, to encourage people who are worried about their bills or stressed about the debt to seek advice. Analysis of polling from research company YouGov suggests around 665,148 of people in Scotland have seen their mental health and well-being affected by debt. CAS says that since last spring, Citizens Advice Bureau have helped write off over £11 million worth of debt, with the average amount written off being over £12,600 per client. CAS financial health spokesperson Sarah Jane Dunn said, "There is a clear link between money and mental health, and that will have been exacerbated by the cost of living crisis." Hundreds of thousands of people across the country, through no fault of their own, have fallen behind on bills and find themselves in debt. Some people will be in debt for the first time, others will have seen their existing debt get worse. There's no shame in having debt, and it's completely understandable to be stressed and anxious about it. For many people, debt is something they ignore until it builds up and becomes overwhelming. That's why we've launched the Stressed About Debt campaign, to encourage people who are worried to seek advice and not let those worries build up until they are suffocating. Last year, anti-fuel poverty groups warned of a rise in debt due to unaffordable energy prices, as figures showed the number of Scots households living in fuel poverty has soared by over 40% in 3 years. According to Scottish Government modelling estimates, from October 2022, there were around 860,000 households in fuel poverty in Scotland, around 35% of homes. That is 247,000 more than 2019, when the last Scottish House Condition Survey, SHCS, showed 613,000 households were in fuel poverty, around 25% of homes. Fuel poverty relates to households that must spend a higher proportion of their household income to keep their home at a reasonable temperature. It is affected by three key factors: a household's income, their fuel costs, and their energy consumption, which in turn is affected by the energy efficiency of the home. It is defined in Scotland that, after housing costs, the total fuel costs needed to maintain a satisfactory heating regime are no more than 10% of the household's total taxable income. Alex Cumming, Executive Director of Operations at Scottish Action for Mental Health, said, "Poor mental health can be a factor in building up debt, and debt can result in mental health problems, including stress and anxiety. Debt and mental health problems often form a vicious circle, and it's important to seek help for both. At SAMH, we hear time and again from the people we support, including those who collect our information service, that they're experiencing issues with money at the same time as needing help with their mental health. We welcome Citizens Advice Scotland's campaign and encourage anyone who is stressed about debt to take the first step going towards getting the support they need." Scottish Government Housing Minister Paul McClellan, MSP, added, "I welcome this important and timely campaign from Citizens Advice Scotland. Advice services play a critical role in helping people to navigate the current cost crisis and to access the support and information they need. The cost of living crisis is putting a huge strain on households, which is why the Scottish Government is doing all it can to deliver support. This year we will invest over £12.5 million in a range of advice services, providing free income maximisation, welfare and death advice. This includes more than £4.45 million to Citizens Advice Scotland and the network of Bureau for the Money Talk team, which offers free confidential and holistic advice. Access to free, confidential and impartial advice through the CAB network, either online or in person, can make a massive difference for people." And that report was by Martin Williams and read by me, Ian. From the Herald Scotland, Monday the 19th of February, from the news section, UK government must allow CPTPP trade deal vote report. Article by Ian McConnell, Business Group Business Editor. The UK government should allow MPs a debate and vote on its deal to join the Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Bloc. That is the view of MPs on the Business and Trade Committee, which has today published a report on UK accession to the CPTPP. The committee says MPs must have their say because of controversial aspects of joining the trade bloc and the lack of clarity over the benefits of doing so. MPs in the committee conclude it is difficult to estimate the potential benefits of CPTPP or its impact on economic growth, noting that this is especially the case because the Secretary of State for Business and Trade, Kemi Badenoch, has distanced herself from economic modelling produced by her own civil servants. The committee considered how CPTPP membership will affect UK safeguards to reports of imports of controversial agri-food products. These, it notes, include beef and pork treated with growth promoters, meat which is currently banned in the UK, agri-food products produced using pesticides that cannot be used in the UK, and palm oil linked to deforestation. The committee points out that any debate and vote on the trade deal will need to take place during a period of just a few weeks when Parliament has the power to delay ratification of an international agreement by the government. Liam Byrne, who chairs the Business and Trade Committee, said, "If we want our economy to grow faster, we need to trade more. Today, the government's target of covering 80% of trade with free trade agreements is beyond reach, and we are off track to meet the target of £1 trillion of exports from 2030. That is why CPTPP is important, but, for all its merits or drawbacks, if we're serious about parliamentary sovereignty, governments must let MPs debate the deal and vote on it. But if we want to get serious about these debates, we need some hard-headed analysis of the economic benefits of the trade deals ministers propose to sign. It is simply not good enough for secretaries of state to cast aside numbers produced by their own department without providing their own figures." MPs on the committee also heard about the contentious CPTPP provisions, allowing governments to be sued by foreign investors over actions that damage their profits, and claimed that this part of the agreement could limit the UK government's ability to regulate or nationalise the English water industry. In an article was by Group Business Editor Ian McConnell. From the Herald Scotland, Monday the 19th of February, from the Arts and Entertainment section, review, Injustice and Barbarism on the Tip of Scotland, article by Rosemary Goring. Clear, Caris Davies, Granta 1499. A few years earlier, his grandmother, mother and sister-in-law all departed, traumatised by the famine they had suffered after their factor made them harvest seaweed rather than use it to fertilise their crops. As a result of that short-lived experiment, the family was reduced to drinking blood from their sheep. Ivar's father and young nephew died of hunger before the bottom fell out of the kelp market and they could return to their old crofting ways. An award-winning short story writer and novelist, whose previous novels West and The Mission House were set in early 19th century Pennsylvania and present-day India, Caris Davies uses this fictional storm-battered island at the furthermost tip of Scotland as an emblem of the injustice and barbarism of the Highland Clearances. It is also a dramatic stage for a story that brings together two vastly contrasting cultures from within the same country with unexpected, one must also say unlikely, consequences. Clear is set in 1843, the year of another seismic event in Scottish history, although its impact does not compare with the reverberations still felt today of people being driven off their land. In that year, close to 500 ministers, led by the famous Thomas Chalmers, announced their intention to leave the Church of Scotland and form the Free Kirk, so called because the appointment of ministers would not be determined by landowners but by parishioners. It was a principled, brave and some said full-hearted decision, leaving many ministers on the verge of destitution as they struggled to fund their new parishes and preachers. Davies' novel features the Reverend John Ferguson, one of these evangelical dissenters. Formerly minister of Broughton Parish in Edinburgh, he is now in desperate financial straits. Troubled at plunging his wife Mary into a life of penury, he accepts a well-paid job to tell Ivar, the island's sole occupant, that he is to be evicted to make way for hundreds of sheep. This unpalatable commission comes via Ferguson's well-off brother-in-law, whose godfather is Henry Lowry, on whose estate the island sits. If the Reverend Ferguson seems a strange choice of envoy, it is not entirely out of character, or so thinks the cynical Lowry. In his experience, not only do Presbyterian ministers do nothing to prevent the progress of the clearances, but the Presbyterian doctrine of providence had proved something of a boon in clearing the people, reminding them, as it did, that the events of their lives were no more than the unfolding of God's will. With great apprehension at so arduous a sea journey, Reverend Ferguson and his wife say goodbye at the Aberdeen quayside, parting ahead of a hazardous expedition, with no assurance of being reunited, is a theme found elsewhere in Davies' fiction. What the minister is to discover on the isolated island is almost as unimaginably other and as beguiling as the American frontier that features in West. Davies' talent for description that brings alive the landscape and the setting and characters of her stories. and clear, the stench of fish in Ivor's primitive hovel, or the tang of salt spume thrown over the beach by an uppity sea, enlivens every page. Hers is a tactile yet spiritual appreciation of a place, offering a portrait as powerful as any photograph or film. There are days when the mist felt like a cloak on the island's shoulders, when rain fell in big coarse drops, melting the soil into a soft brown soup. In this liminal location, where it will be weeks before a boat returns to carry them both away, not that Ferguson has yet conveyed his terrible message, neither Ivar nor the minister speaks each other's language. Nevertheless, a connection is forged as the Reverend painstakingly learns words for flowers, birds, animals and weather, and Ivar, laughing at his pronunciation, rejoices in having company. Drawing on the old Norn language once spoken in Orkney and Shetland, Davy is lovingly, and too lingeringly, studs her chapters with words conveying an entirely other realm of experience. A fog could be a scump or a gillum, a bluera, an ask or a dunk, unless of course it was a mist, in which case it was a seora or a murkerbrod or a groma, a rag or a nombrisum, a dalarik, a hymna, a yema or a dom, dot dot dot. As Ferguson quickly learns this new lingo, given the novel's short timescale, he is a linguistic prodigy. David's story is a paean to lost languages, and a reflection on what we have lost with their demise. The depths of meaning contained in Old Norn, and its effect on the minister, underline the fact that words are not just functional, but illuminate the world at a profound level. While Ferguson is marooned on the outermost limits of the North Sea, his fretful wife decides to join him. The voyage is filled with danger, but she makes for the island only to discover peril of an entirely different kind. Davy's skill at short story writing is evident in this painterly and uncluttered novel. Her grasp of historical mood rarely falters, and each scene is set with minimal description, leaving space for the reader's imagination. Less convincingly, and highly improbable, is the culmination of the plot. I can't comment on this without giving away the story, but I have reservations about the authenticity of events that, rather too abruptly, bring the novel to a close, especially given the personality of the Freekirk minister at their centre. Although the novel's open-endedness is fitting for a story shaped by elemental powers, the final pages feel rushed. Even so, Clear is a memorable and beautifully told tale. By its end, Davy's evocation of the great disruption in the lives of her characters has proved as cataclysmic as the religious breakaway it springs from. And that book review is by Rosemary Goring.
The Herald on the 20th of February and the news section. Edinburgh Airport Ryanair flight grounded by fuel leak by Julie Harrison. Passengers waiting to take off from a Scottish airport were left panicked after it was swarmed by emergency crews minutes before it was due to take off to the air. Holidaygoers were ready to take off to Tenerife from Edinburgh Airport when their departure was suddenly halted and the plane surrounded by fire crews. Three fire engines raced the aircraft as it sat on the tarmac and pointed their water cannons at the plane, according to one traveller. This passenger told how she was left scared after everyone was told to disembark from the flight after a technical issue. They later found out that the technical issue was a fuel leak and the plane was not allowed to take off during its 1:10 p.m. slot on Saturday afternoon. Everyone was then taken to another flight, which departed around 3 p.m. Lisa Conway, 32, was going on holiday with her partner David Smith when the incident unfolded. Ms. Conway from Hamilton told the Daily Record, "People on the plane were panicking in case the plane went on fire with water cannons pointed at it. We were then packed into buses and we couldn't get off as they had to move crew and ground staff and secure the fuel leak. First time I've experienced anything like that. It was scary." Ryanair also told the Daily Record that staff carried out standard procedures and fire crews were called in as a precaution. A spokesperson said the flight from Edinburgh to Tenerife, 17th Feb, was delayed ahead of takeoff due to a minor technical issue with the aircraft. The aircraft remained on stand, passengers were disembarked, and the aircraft was taken for inspection by engineers, who cleared the aircraft to return to service later that night. The minimum disruption to passengers, a replacement aircraft, was quickly arranged to operate this flight, departing Edinburgh approximately an hour 40 minutes later. We sincerely apologise for any inconvenience caused as a result of this short delay. And that was by Jodie Harrison. The Herald on the 20th of February and the news section. Man arrested and charged over Alan Lawson death in Saltcoats by Gabriel Mackay. A man has been arrested and charged in connection with the death of a man in Saltcoats, North Ayrshire. Alan Lawson, 36, died in hospital earlier this month after what is alleged to have been a sustained assault at a house in Largs. It's believed he was returned to his home in Saltcoats after being detained against his will in a house in Largs, with alleged videos of the attack circulating on Snapchat. Neighbour told the Ardrossan in Saltcoats Herald, "No one I've talked to heard anything. It's absolutely horrible. I don't think any of the neighbours knew Alan well. He kept himself to himself, but would always say hello to you in the street. He was quiet and a nice enough neighbour. He came to our door to see if we could help when his phone went down recently." Police Scotland said a 29-year-old man has been arrested and charged in connection with the death of Alan Lawson, 36, from Saltcoats. Mr. Lawson died in hospital on Tuesday, 6 February 2024, following an assault at a property on Alexander Avenue, Largs, over the weekend of Saturday, 3 February 2024. The 29-year-old man is due at Kilmarnock's Sheriff Court on Tuesday, 20th February 2024, and a report will be sent to the Procurator Fiscal. And that was by Gabriel Mackay. The Herald on the 20th of February and the news section. EICC comes full circle with record revenue and profit by Kirsty Dorsey. The Edinburgh International Conference Centre, EICC, has come full circle since the onset of the pandemic to report record revenues and profits in 2023. The venue, which recently hosted the three-week Scottish COVID-19 inquiry, generated revenues of £12.8 million during the year to the end of December, up from £11.8 million in 2022. Meanwhile, profits more than trebled from £699,000 to £2.6 million. Chief Executive Marshall Dallas said the EIC kept its sales team intact through the pandemic, which in respect was integral to our revenue performance last year because we were able to hit the ground running post-pandemic. After closing our doors in March 2020, we pivoted to become the city's main vaccination centre the following year, and it felt fitting to have the recent COVID inquiry here in the same building, he said. In addition to being a commercial enterprise, hosting events of this nature fulfills our triple bottom line objectives of having a strong economic value, leading the way in sustainability, and positively impacting societal matters. The EICC's economic impact totaled £58 million last year versus £51.9 million previously. Total economic impact since the EICC opened its doors in 1995 is now at approximately £850 million. The venue, which is run at arm's length by City of Edinburgh Council, hosted more than 132,000 delegates and visitors during the year compared to 72,000 previously. A total of 18 international associations held major conferences at the EICC in 2023, among them the Global Equity Organization's 24th annual conference in April, the 15th World Congress on Endometriosis in May, and Hydro 2023 in October. Holding large international association conferences is a significant part of our raison d'etre. And in the current year, we already have 21 international conferences confirmed to take place. So that's a really encouraging number for us and for business tourism in general in Edinburgh and Scotland, Mr. Dallas added. In December, the EICC announced a string of major conference wins over the next 3 years that will equate to its strongest ever pipeline of events business. 40 conferences and events will bring about 20,000 delegates to Edinburgh and the EICC and translates to approximately £32 million of economic impact. Two of the major international association conferences taking place this year at the EICC are the World Congress on Controversies in Breast Cancer in September and the 36th International papillomavirus conference in November. And that was by Kirsty Dorsley. The Herald on the 20th of February and the news section. Scots travelling to India for dental treatment, says Lib Dems, by Jodie Harrison. Trouble accessing an NHS dentist in Scotland has seen Scots travel to countries like India for treatment, the Scottish Liberal Democrats have said. MSP Willie Rennie has accused Scottish ministers of excruciating neglect as he claims more than 300 constituents have come forward about their concerns in a number of days. He said one constituent said that they had resorted to DIY dentistry with tools purchased on Amazon after being on an NHS waiting list for 4 years. Other respondents referenced travelling abroad, with one saying they now see a dentist in Goa, India, and another travelling to Turkey for checkups and treatment after their local practice closed. The Scottish Liberal Democrats will lead a debate in Holyrood on Wednesday on the crisis in the dentistry sector. Mr. Rennie said other respondents highlighted the expensive cost of private treatment, spending almost £400 on x-rays, two fillings and cleaning. Ahead of the parliamentary debate, Mr. Rennie said, these devastating stories expose the SNP's excruciating neglect of NHS dentistry. No matter how much pain you're in, seeing a dentist in Scotland is harder than ever before. Scottish Liberal Democrats have long campaigned for tooth care to be universally accessible, just like any kind of healthcare. He added, if the SNP keep refusing to listen, NHS dentistry could vanish from Scotland. This time, I sincerely hope that the government does the right thing and backs our motion, which would see ministers rewrite their failed NHS recovery plan to prioritise workforce planning and boost the number of dentists taking on NHS patients. That is how we will enable everyone to be seen and guarantee comprehensive treatment at the point of need in every community. The Scottish Government has been asked for comment. Charlotte Waite, Director of the British Dental Association Scotland, said, the crisis in the service has seen desperate patients take matters into their own hands or head overseas for care that should be available in their own communities. The Scottish Government unveiled some reforms back in November. Time will tell if it's enough to turn the tide so those who want and need NHS care can secure it. And that was by Jodie Harrison. The Herald on the 20th of February and the news section. EIS warns teachers suffering broken bones amid a rising pupil violence by Jodie Harrison. Some teachers are ending up in hospital with broken bones due to an increasing levels of violence they face at work, a union leader has said. David Besley, Assistant Secretary of the Educational Institute of Scotland, EIS, said teachers are also ending up with post-traumatic stress disorder due to violent incidents. It comes as three teachers in Aberdeen spoke to the BBC anonymously about their concerns around pupil attacks. The EIS is calling for the City Council to take action. In November, a report from the union warned pupil violence has increased over the last 4 years and 82.7% of schools were reporting violent or aggressive incidents each week. Mr. Besley told the BBC's Good Morning Scotland programme, we deal with teachers who have been assaulted and go to hospital with broken bones. And that's without, of course, the post-traumatic stress disorders and the effects on teachers' mental health after long-term dealing with very aggressive situations in classes. He said there is a need to accept that behaviour has got worse with a number of factors potentially contributing to it. These include staff shortages, the influence of social media, and the impact of the pandemic, he said. One of the teachers who spoke to the BBC said she is scared in my workplace, while another said an incident had left her with a concussion. Aberdeen City Council Education Convener Martin Gregg said feedback from staff would be considered. He told the BBC, everyone who visits and uses a school environment is entitled to expect that place to be a safe, peaceful, respectful environment. So any complaints that come through need to be addressed, in the interests especially of the young people, but also of staff, families, anyone who's involved in the life of the school. He added, behaviour in schools is monitored. There are policies and procedures to make sure staff are as safe as possible. There's always more that you can do, and we are absolutely keen to do whatever is necessary to ensure that environment feels safe for all, for staff, for parents and carers, especially for the young people. And that was by Jodie Harrison.
That concludes this week's edition of the Herald Scotland podcast. Please remember to subscribe to our channels at Peer Review. Tell your friends about our service.